In episode 89 of Deeper Than Dough, I'm joined by Mary Sinnes, co-founder and COO of Roni's Mac Bar, a fast-growing build-your-own mac and cheese restaurant in Central Texas. We explore the ups and downs of business ownership, entrepreneurship, and how both luck and social media can shape a brand. One of the most memorable parts of our conversation is how viral moments, whether good or bad, can bring emotional challenges, but also huge business opportunities if you learn to manage the attention. Mary's story, from going viral for the wrong reasons to being in talks with Shark Tank and franchising, is truly inspiring. Welcome to another episode of the Deeper Than Dough podcast. Today, I'm super excited to have Mary Sinnes on the show. Mary, welcome.
Thank you.
So Mary, you and I, we got connected on social media, and then similar to, maybe I'm going to toot my horn a little bit, but because I'm in the cookie business, my website and my Instagram looks great because it's food. And I'm going to tell you, yours does too. I was scrolling through the Instagram and man, it made me super hungry and super annoyed that you don't have any locations yet in Utah.
Well, coming soon.
Coming soon. Yes. Mary, you guys have, just to give a little bit of an intro, and then I'm going to let you finish the intro, but you guys have, it's Roni's Mac Bar. You guys have four locations in Texas and another 25 sold. You only franchised a year ago, so the expansion is going amazing. Of those 25, are any in Utah?
Actually, yeah, I totally forgot that you're in Utah. But yeah, our next one that's supposed to open within the next month is actually going to be in Provo.
Yes, so, I'm there. Yeah. Invite me to the grand opening if you don't mind. And I'll be there eating some mac and cheese and grilled cheese because that's what I love and that's what you guys serve. So
yes.
Mary, can you give us a little, minute or two of your background and kind of what led you up to the mac and cheese? What have you been doing before that?
Totally. Well, obviously in the mac and cheese world now, but before that I was more in your realm. I was in dessert. So right out of college, I opened a cookie dough business.
Oh, awesome.
Which started as just like a home-based side gig. I was applying for jobs after school and just a short few months after I graduated, COVID hit. And so no one was hiring. And so I decided to pursue this cookie dough business that I'd already kind of had in my head, for edible cookie dough. So I did that. We ended up opening a couple storefronts here in Central Texas. And then one of them had an empty space right next to it. And my husband and I kind of joked back and forth about opening something there. And then one day decided to actually do it. And that's what's now Roni's Mac Bar. We came up with this build your own mac and cheese concept. And we opened in Waco, Texas back in February of 2022. Like you said, we now have a few stores open. We started franchising a year ago. And we're just very quickly growing, which is awesome.
So when was that first store? You said February of 2022, and that's a corporate store. Or is that when you guys franchised?
Yeah, that was our first corporate store. Yeah.
Okay. And then you franchised roughly a year ago, sometime in 2023. And within a year, you were not only able to sell franchises, but you were able to open up the first three locations.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We signed our first franchise in August of 2023. So it's only just been over a year by a little bit.
Okay. And that's pretty atypical because signing up a franchisee, one, that takes time and marketing and effort and figuring it out. But once you sign them, then you have to find the real estate, make sure that's approved, and then you have to open it up. And there's countless delays. What do you feel like was the key to success of, like, I'm going to franchise and open up three locations within a year franchising? How did you do that?
Yeah. Social media. We got really, really lucky when we first opened our corporate store in Waco. We actually had a video go viral on TikTok with over 15 million views just 2 months after opening. And the first video that went viral is for all the wrong reasons. People hated us. People made fun of our food. People were like, why are you doing this? Or why are you not doing that? We were able to take it and run with it and use all of the free feedback that we were getting from millions of people, literally, and make improvements. And then that was able to kind of turn the hate into love. And so now we get all these comments, but they're actually positive instead of negative. So with that, I mean, there was so much demand to open in other towns and other states, and also so many people asking to franchise before we were even franchising. It definitely is all owed to social media. We really haven't gotten into too much besides just the organic reach for franchising. We haven't done like paid ads or anything like that. It's just been people who come across our TikTok or our YouTube, which has been obviously extremely helpful.
Social media is so huge. Yes. People say to me, like, how did you guys sell so many franchises at Dirty Dawn? I was like, all through social media. We've never closed, out of hundreds of franchises, we've never closed one from a paid lead source. But we're out there on social media. And mainly, I shouldn't say mainly, Dirty Dough isn't. Dirty Dough doesn't advertise franchises. But I do on my personal social media here and there, you know, and that's where a lot of the leads come from just that personal branding and social media, which complete surprise to me. I never wanted to spend the time on personal social media and branding. And then that's been probably our biggest revenue source from selling franchises and from raising outside capital. So completely agree with you there. But I want to dive into that video. What was the video of? How long was it? You know, walk me through it. What was the hate? What was the criticism? And what did you do to change it?
Oh my gosh. It was just a video of, I think I recorded it and then my husband did the voiceover for it. But it was just like, one that we would never post nowadays, even the voiceover on it. It was like a very drawn out, like, I'm Mary Sinnes and I'm the founder of Roni's Mac Bar in Waco, Texas. And like, just so drawn out, but it was just us making one of our more popular bowls, like a buffalo mac and cheese with chicken and onions and buffalo sauce. Rightfully so. I mean, we truly didn't know what we were doing when we started Roni's. I mean, we're still kind of winging it, but we've definitely learned a lot since then. And so, I mean, I look back on those videos and I'm like, yeah, why did our cheese sauce look like that? Or like, why wasn't our chicken more seasoned? You know, we weren't baking our mac and cheese. And shortly after we got all those comments, we went out and bought an oven. It was just a video of us making our food.
You bake mac and cheese or you cook it on the stovetop in water? Or what's
we bake it.
Okay.
Well, we like boil it and cook it on the stovetop beforehand. Okay. But then once it's all assembled, we add some shredded cheese on there and then throw it in the oven to get that nice like crispy top.
And you weren't doing that until the video came about. And correct. Then you're like, oh, that's something. And that's so cool. That it's something that I actually spoke about with someone today, like going into market. And most of us, we go into market with a good idea that's, we think it's vetted at least somewhat, and it's not at all. Like we didn't go ask 1,000 people or even 100 people, but it was like, here it is. So like, here's the idea. And for you, you probably never crossed your mind on the baking it. So what a cool opportunity that you had so many views, even though they were negative, I'm sure a lot of them were positive, but even though a lot of them were negative, if you followed our story at all, you know, we blew up due to publicity from what would typically be seen as negative, you know, a lawsuit. And, I want to ask a question on the, so you receive all the feedback, which was great and just such a good business strategy to then go make the changes. Emotionally though, how did you handle that? Like, how did you handle, like, I'm at one store, guys, leave me the F alone. Like, I'm just trying my best. How did you get through that? Both you and your husband, what philosophies or points of view were able to grasp helped you with that?
Yeah, totally. Well, at first I was just confused genuinely because it truly was like that. I was like, no, you guys don't understand. Like, we're just a small business. Like you don't get it. I was so confused because like I said, I had the cookie dough company beforehand as well. And then we had Roni's for a couple months and the only views or comments or engagement of any sort was just from people in our town or people who knew us personally. So it was just very confusing to me that people were commenting who weren't even from here, didn't know anything about us. So at first it was very confusing and then it turned very disheartening. I especially really struggled at first, and I called my therapist because I think I had a therapy appointment like a couple weeks from then, and I was like, is there any way we can move it up to tomorrow? because I definitely struggled quite a bit. It's so interesting, and I don't know how. I don't really have like a personal brand like you do. I don't understand how people with a large following on their individual accounts can deal with it, because I feel like it's one thing for your company to get hate, but for you to personally get hate, I can't even imagine. But anyway, I took it very hard at first. My husband was it was much easier for him to kind of set aside the emotions, and he just saw like the view counts and the number of comments and the line. I mean, even though people were hating us online, so many people were coming to try it. Maybe because they wanted to see if it was as bad as it looked, or maybe they thought it was actually really cool, but, he was able to kind of see the numbers. And so I eventually kind of after talking to him was able to set aside the emotions and sort of see like the hidden blessing that came out of it.
Yeah. And how did your therapist help you through that? And I know, and to give a little bit of background, like I'm the biggest proponent of everybody, especially business owners, should see a therapist, because there's so much stress and you have so many decisions that you're making and you're just like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. And then you go get advice and everybody gives you advice, or typically gives you advice on like how to grow your business. But why do you want to grow your business? Well, I want to grow my business because I want more money. Why do I want more money? Because I want to feel a certain way. It's like, just skip all that bullshit and go straight to a therapist and say, this is how I want to feel. How can you help me do that? But talk to me about what did your therapist say or recommend that helped you get through that situation? And what would be your recommendation to other entrepreneurs in regards to therapy?
Yeah. You know, I wish I had some specific, like, profound thing that she said that I could, you know, say word for word. But I think more than anything, it was really just, just being able to talk about it and vent about it. And because I think for anyone else in my life, it felt like I couldn't talk negatively about what was happening, because to them it was like, well, you got 15 million views, so like, what are you complaining about? Yeah. So I think just being able to kind of share my feelings more openly and honestly without like kind of feeling bad about it. And also definitely helped walk me through being able to set aside the emotion of it all and recognize that like, you're right, you don't know these people don't know you. And as helpful as their comments ended up being in the long run, just sort of being able to not let it affect my personal emotions right off the bat. And now, like, I rarely even look at comments, or if I do, I'm able to filter them out. Or, I mean, they're just not even there anymore. Like, there's not the negativity that we got in the beginning.
Yeah, you answered you asked the question, like, what about personal branding? How do you separate? I do think it's the same. Like, whether it's they're attacking your business, your mom, your wife, or you personally, either way, it comes down to realizing like, who the hell are these people?
Yeah.
I don't know them. They don't know me. And they're coming from who knows where, but something is going on in their mind that they feel that they need to comment negatively on somebody's post that they don't really know. And then it's kind of just like, I knocked doors for several years and I probably knocked 30,000 doors, you know, so I was used to the F-offs.
Yeah.
Quite a bit. I think that helped. Yeah. So like you looking back at like during the moment, I'm like, I'm sure you're like, man, this sucks. Now looking back, you've already mentioned like, man, what a big help. One from the view count and then two from the feedback. And I'm sure it took a lot of humility to take that feedback. I'm like, oh, I need to actually listen to it, which kind of leads me to the next question. You said we got really lucky. And I say that all the time too. I was on somebody else's podcast earlier today and they were conveying a similar idea, but they didn't say lucky. They said blessed. And I said, I like luck versus blessed. Cause I don't, anyways, I want to ask you, why do you use the word lucky rather than anything else? And again, right out there, you're just like, no, I got lucky.
Yeah.
Where does that come from?
I mean, I think it really is like for example, we had that video go viral without even trying. I mean, sure, we posted the video, and obviously you always kind of hope that something is going to do well when you publish it. But it wasn't our intention to get 15 million views. That just sort of happened. That sort of fell into our lap. We were able to use that and kind of use strategy after the fact, but leading up to it, I mean, it really was luck. Like we didn't try to make a viral video. We just made a video and it happened to go viral. And I think that same thing has happened in a lot of different areas. I'm of course we work hard, but it kind of has to work together with universe or whatever helping you.
It does. Like, you start a business and you're MySpace and you blow up, but the second to market hit better timing because people were more familiar with it. And like, and I not just to use that example, there's 1,000 examples of like amazing companies that just hit the wrong timing. Amazing real estate companies that launched in 2008. It's just like,
yeah,
sorry, unlucky. But I do think that using the word luck rather than, you know, well, we were just so consistent. We just busted our asses and just posted every day, and we knew one of them would hit. And you're just like, when you recognize it as luck, I think it opens the world to more, or opens you to more gratitude. Cause now you're just like, wow, that's cool. And now you're running your business for more like, oh wow, I got lucky and I'm grateful for that luck, rather than like, it's because I'm better than somebody else. So anyways, yeah. That's kind of stuck out to me. And I think that is a lot of humility. And I don't think people talk about that enough. And I did hear somebody recently talk about, like, people say the number one reason for businesses failing is a lack of capital. It's actually timing. And who knows if it's true or not, but it's like, people don't talk, and who controls the timing?
Right.
Kind of nobody. That's where it comes down to luck. So,
yeah.
Anyways, I really like that you said that.
Yeah.
I want to jump back to your cookie dough business. I specifically on the challenges, mm-hmm. What was the biggest challenge? But it doesn't have to be the biggest, one of the bigger challenges. And what was the biggest lesson or skill that you were able to draw from that?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I mean, I definitely learned so much. I think as much as I talk about how we didn't know what we were doing when we started Roni's, we definitely didn't know what we were doing when we started the cookie dough business, Do Re Mi. My husband and I both, I kind of founded it and was sort of the sole one running it for a while, but my husband actually left his full-time job to come over to Do Re Mi when we opened our first storefront. So that was even a whole thing in itself that we had to learn how to do, is like rely on ourselves versus a paycheck that we were getting every week. So more than anything, I mean, there's a lot of technical things that we learned. There was a lot that we learned even just running a food business or whatever. But I think the biggest thing that we learned was just that sort of independence that we had to have and just how to be an entrepreneur. That was obviously huge for where we are now.
Problem solving skills, which I'm sure you weren't grateful for that opportunity in the moment.
Yeah.
Because usually it's hard to be, you know, like, man, if it only wasn't COVID, I would have a normal job and I wouldn't be putting my life on the line on a, I mean, I don't know if that was your experience, but typically you open your first restaurant and they require a personal guarantee. And typically you're signing a 5, probably 10-year lease mm-hmm. at, I don't know the rates there on your first spot, but let's say it's $3,000 a month. Like, you're signing a personal guarantee for a lot of money, several hundred thousand dollars. And that's not always most exciting thing to do.
Yeah.
Where is Do Re Mi today? And, or how did it end if it's not all around any longer?
Yeah. So we ended up exiting in October. So almost a year ago, we actually sold it to another cookie dough company called Cookie Dough Bliss. And we didn't set out to sell it. We actually had talked about it potentially in the near-ish future. We kind of always knew that Roni's was going to go much farther. But we also enjoyed, you know, cookie dough. So we had both. But we knew that one day we would probably want to sell Do Re Mi. And shortly after we had that conversation, just my husband and I, we had the owner of Cookie Dough Bliss message me on Facebook, and say, "Hey, I know that you're you and your husband have Roni's, would you by chance want to sell your cookie dough business? And I was like, were you listening to us? Like, thanks, were you at our house?
Facebook was listening to your phone and they told
them. Yeah, exactly. It was crazy timing because we had never had anyone even ask before that. And so, I mean, we set up the phone call with him, but I was like, okay, this clearly isn't going to go anywhere. This is like one person who has asked and they're probably... I didn't even know that he worked for another cookie dough company. I thought it was just some random person who lived nearby and liked the business, but really didn't think much of it. And then it ended up happening. And they still have our spot that we had in Waco. So it's kind of cool. We get to see where they are now. And yeah, it was a really nice way to exit. It was very rewarding. We were able to say, okay, this company was officially successful. And now we're able to fully focus on Roni's. And I think that was the hard thing with having both is we were having to split our energy 50-50 when really Roni's would, you know, you would put some energy into it and it would go 10 times farther. So it only made sense for us to take all of our energy and be able to put it into Roni's. But yeah, I mean, Do-Re-Mi was great. It, like I said, it taught us a lot and we're very satisfied with how ended for us.
So I had a similar story and I had a solar company and I purchased Dirty Dough and I was running them both and it just wasn't what it was too much. So I sold the solar company a few months after. And then I brought on an advisor and I still had some decent money coming in from the solar in both a salary plus in stock options. And it was a public traded company. And this advisor's like, no, I'm not going to be your advisor unless you leave that. And I'm like, no, because it's like an hour a week, dude. Like I need to keep this salary, all of this. And he's like, no, this is what people get wrong. You know, there's serial entrepreneurs and people think that serial entrepreneurs own a bunch of businesses at the same time. And he's like, no, they start a business, they stabilize it or exit and then go to the next one. And that was such a big piece of advice for me. And I think that was the key really for me to let go of that other one. And like, even though it already sold, I was still a little bit apart and just like, just focus. So 1,000% agree with you on that focus. He also said something, I was trying to buy a few more real estate properties and I'm like, you know, should I put the money into Dirty Dough? I've already invested so much and this and that. Or these real estate properties because they already have so much equity because I've been building them. And he's like, real estate deals, you could earn 5, 10, 20, 30% on a good deal. But grow your business and you can make 100x return, which just doesn't exist in real estate if you're able to focus. And it's kind of the put all your eggs in one basket, guard it like hill, build wealth, and then diversify. But while you're building it, you want to really narrow down and focus. And then once you have it, that's the time to diversify.
Yeah.
Is that similar to your experience? Or do you agree or disagree with any of that?
Yeah, totally. No, I completely, it was definitely very much a case of like, if we had money to spend or we had the time and energy to do something, it was very much, we had to make the decision of, okay, do we put it towards, because also Do-Re-Mi was starting to grow really quickly as well. Shortly after Roni's kind of took off, we sort of learned how to do social media. And so Do-Re-Mi started getting a following and we were able to ship our cookie dough, which a video goes viral on TikTok. If you're able to ship right to the viewer's doorstep, it's so much more correlated with sales than them having to come to your store in person. So, I mean, Do-Re-Mi started to take off and we're like, okay, do we, you know, open a warehouse for Do-Re-Mi or do we open another Roni's? And a lot of similar situations like that. So yeah, for sure. Definitely a lot easier now just having like, okay, I know exactly what we're going to do because there's only one thing we can do.
Yes. And then you go into like the neurology or the neuroscience of like, okay, you can't multitask. You think you can, but you're only capable of holding one thought at a time. So you're really just rapidly going from I'm reading this and listening to you, but I can't do them both at the same time.
Yeah.
I'm reading two words and then trying to listen to you and have my thoughts bounce back and forth. But like try holding two thoughts at the same time in your mind. Yeah. Doesn't work, you know, so that there's a lot of evidence on, you know, you can't multitask, and that energy to switch from one task to other is very costly. So you mentioned that you felt really, I mean, like that proof of concept and that proof of like, man, this is a successful business hit once you sold it. I want to dive a little bit deeper into that on how did you expect to feel when you'd sold it versus, and how long did you expect to feel that way versus reality? Because anyways, answer the question before I put, before I put any words in your mouth.
Oh man. Well, first of all, it was a very quick process. I mean, from the day that they reached out to us to when the money hit our account was maybe 2 months.
Okay.
And like I said, before he reached out, it wasn't really a full thought. So there wasn't a whole lot of time to like wrap our heads around what was happening. And like I said, I had started DoReMi right after college, literally like days after graduating. That's kind of all I knew post grad life. And I had built it truly from the ground up. So I think I expected to be a little bit more sad than I did. And I think, like I said, knowing like, okay, this was officially successful really helped kind of balance out the sadness that probably would have been there otherwise. 'Cause I think it was a really helpful that like, we didn't have to close it down. It's not, you know, we didn't have to close it because things got too hectic. There was never any regret in that or any what ifs that we asked. So I think I expected, it almost sounds bad, but like to be more sad than I actually was, but really I was just proud and honestly relieved.
How long do you feel like that, like the, and focusing on the positive side, and now I'll kind of get to where the root of the question is, most of us set goals and we're like, if we could only achieve this, if we could only open up our first brick and mortar or our third brick and mortar, if we could only franchise, if we could only make our first million, if we could only make our first 10 million, if only we can, and then you hit it and you hit it and you hit it and you hit it. And yes, you get that momentarily dopamine hit, but it always goes away. And then you just set the next goal a day, a week, a month later, and then you just keep driving and you forget about all the things that you told yourself you would be doing or the way you would be feeling if you were to achieve that goal. You just forget about it all. You're like, I was wrong, but the next one is just around the corner. So talk to me kind of what are your thoughts on that and how to break that loop, especially now that you've been through it once. You're like, I had a business, I sold it, I felt a certain way. Now I have Roni. When I sell that, if and when, or maybe you don't sell it and you just build it up to a certain cash flow number, but how do you make sure that once you actually hit the goals that you're enjoying them and that you're not just immediately setting that next goal and staying in that rat race?
Yeah. It's kind of interesting comparing DoReMi and Roni's in that realm because my mindset on that topic is so different for both businesses. With DoReMi, I never really... Obviously, I had goals and I had things that I wanted to happen, but they were never really that big picture. I was always kind of just like amazed that someone even wanted to buy the cookie dough, much less like anything past that. So I think at DoReMi, honestly, I was able to even appreciate it a little bit more and like be in the moment more because I was always kind of just like, okay, well, people are buying it, so I'm happy. With Roni's, there are a lot more big picture goals, and it's a lot more of that like, okay, we want to start franchising. Okay, now we've started franchising. Now we need to open our first store. Okay, now we've opened our first store. Let's get to 10. Let's get to 100. I think it is much more of that like never fully satisfied feeling. And it's kind of interesting. Yeah. I've never really thought of it like that, but sort of comparing the two.
Your expectations are a lot higher on this one, on the second one then, right?
Exactly. So it's
probably good because you're going to try to meet those expectations, but our mood level at any given time is pretty closely correlated versus our expectations or with our expectations versus reality. So like you telling me, well, I enjoyed the first one because I had lower expectations. Then it's like, okay, well, what do you do next? Do you have lower expectations for Roni and that way it increases life satisfaction? Or no, because you're so, you know, dead set on the fuel and the growth and the progression and more, more, more. Where's that balance?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I wish I knew the answer. I definitely love the feeling of like having something to look forward to.
Yeah.
Honestly, I mean, if I had to say, like, I feel like the balance is kind of taking a moment after you hit some milestone or something that you were really looking to forward to being in the moment and appreciating it and then kind of moving forward. But I think a lot of the time it's easy to kind of skip past that, like taking the moment. So I think that's kind of the balance, is like kind of doing both a little bit.
And I mean, I was saying me too, meaning I also wish I knew how the answer. What about specific on the expectation? And this is something that I've been focusing on. You know, you have the happiness gap. Here's where I'm at. And if I can only get this, what I want, then I'll be happier. So there's two ways to bridge that gap. Go get what you think you want to be happy. But what tends to happen every time is you get it and then it resets, right?
Yeah.
And then you just keep playing that game forever. Or you can lower or shorten that gap by wanting what you already have, you know, and focusing on expectations. But there's a big drive or push, I think, against that, because society is all about, well, if you're not progressing, then you're nothing. You know, if you're not progressing, you're going to behind. And I've been caught up in that mindset. And now I'm finally trying to break out of that. And I'm just like, well, other than humans, what else is trying to progress every year? Is the sun trying to shine brighter every day? Is the earth trying to go around the earth faster every year? Like, where's this progression coming from? And does it always lead to emptiness? Because I always am going to want more. And if I don't want more, I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing.
Right.
What are your thoughts on the expectations and having higher versus lower expectations?
Yeah, that's definitely hard. I think, I think me as a person, I think I try to be like, live in the moment, be happy with where you are, that kind of side. But I think the entrepreneur in me is definitely like, no, we need to keep going. So I kind of see both sides a little bit of like, both of those kind of could be beneficial. And I think it just sort of also depends on like what part of your life you're in. I think like in my personal life, for example, I think it's easy to be like, okay, when you're dating someone, you just want to be engaged. And then when you're engaged, you want to get married. And then you just want to have a kid and then two kids. And I think for that, it's been really important for me to be like, okay, slow down, just live in the moment. Things will happen when they happen. And that's great. But I think in my work life, I almost feel like it's been important for me to kind of have those goals to keep pushing forward. But perhaps I've been looking at it the wrong way, you know? I don't know.
The answer to that either. I just know that I've just recently started thinking about it. And I'm like, if you're not progressing, you can't have joy and fulfillment. And then I heard somebody say that's, not a great mentality and it's a recipe for disaster. And then I'm analyzing it more and more and I'm like, yes, it does get you more if you have higher goals and higher expectations, but to what end? You know, you want more for what? Anyway, so I will let you know if I ever find the answer. I will shoot you a text. What were you going to do? Like when you said COVID, nobody was hiring, what kind of job were you looking for? Did you have some education that you were like prepping for a certain job? What was that path like?
Yeah. So I got my degree in HR management. Still very kind of comes into play all the time. I'm very passionate about like employee experience, and I think that's been super beneficial. But yeah, I actually got a job in March of 2020, and then they were like, nope, just kidding, we are not able to bring anyone on right now. So it was gonna be an HR coordinator at a hotel, which I have always loved hospitality. Again, sort of relates to owning a restaurant as well. But in my mind, I was like, oh, this is the ideal job for me. That was like my dream job at the time. So obviously was crushed when it didn't work out. But yeah, HR at a hotel.
And then you moved into entrepreneurship, which I assume, I guess you never accepted any HR role, but given what you know, would you agree that entrepreneurship is a lot harder slash more taxing than what you would be doing with HR?
Yeah. So I actually, while we had Doremi and Roni's, somehow, I don't know who I thought I was or how many hours I thought were in a day, but I actually ended up getting a job in HR for a company. It's Hello Bello. It's a diaper company actually owned by like Kristen Bell. Anyway, I feel like I kind of did it backwards, where a lot of people get like a 9-to-5 and then they get tired of it and they start a business. That's like a lot of entrepreneur stories, I think. But for me, I kind of skipped the 9-to-5 part. And then I was like, wait, I kind of want to know what that's like, just to have something to compare to. So I got that job. It only lasted a few months. My brain was like, while I was at work, I was daydreaming of, you know, Doremi or Roni's. But for sure, I mean, I'm sure it depends on what you're doing, but in every way possible, owning my own business was so much harder, to the point where like I kind of felt underutilized. And at the company, I was like, oh, like my boss's boss is doing stuff that I normally do for our company. That's so interesting. So yeah, I think it was a very weird to me experience having one set position and one set list of expectations when I'm used to like kind of doing a little bit of everything.
Entrepreneurs, you have the kind of type A personality, ADHD, at least somewhere on the spectrum. And you're like, I can't sit still for five hours doing the same damn thing. I want to be in HR, and then I want to be on a strategy call, and I'm going to talk with a marketing person. And typically ADHD is understood for a lack of dopamine. So it's like, I need to switch tasks to see what gives me more dopamine. And that's why you, even though it's so hard and stressful, you typically thrive in the entrepreneurship environment because of that freedom to kind of go from one to another. So last question for you, what has been the hardest or one of the hardest parts of entrepreneurship? And I might have a follow-up question from that.
Ooh, the hardest part. Honestly, I think for me, especially having that HR background, it's like the fact that kind of more than the customers, it's like the employees kind of knowing that like they're relying on the success of our company. And I think I especially kind of take that to heart, where it's almost sort of become like this big pressure buildup where I'm constantly like sort of hyper focusing on that. And it's a really cool thing. I love having employees. It's probably my favorite part of this job. It's so cool we have people who started working for us in high school and now they're like on our corporate team. I mean, we've only been around for a few years, so perhaps they're like an intern or something on our corporate team, but it's cool getting to see, you know, especially like these young people who are just excited to be there, and then sort of see them like grow up a little bit. But it is a lot of pressure for sure, and something that I'm kind of always thinking about.
Love that. So what would be your advice, I guess, to, there's the hardest part, very rewarding, but also very stressful. If you're talking to another entrepreneur that has that same, like, this is also my hardest point. I can't deal with the stress of making payroll every other week because families rely on me and they need me. And like, what's your advice to them to get through that?
Oh man, I think just like talking. I'm constantly talking to our employees, for example, and like, as you know, as hard as it is, I think I have more confidence now that like, okay, like they're happy with their jobs. They enjoy it. Because I'm able to talk to them and have those conversations. And I know that they feel comfortable answering honestly So I think just building those relationships, talking about it, and just being open and honest kind of in every area.
Love that. I mean, the more you dive into it and like, okay, well, what if this employee leaves or this? Well, go talk to them. You know?
Yeah.
If you have a good relationship with them, you know exactly what they're looking for, what you're offering, and how to bridge that gap if there's a gap. So
yeah.
Anyways, Mary, I really appreciate your time. Where can listeners connect with you and your business? We'll include everything in the show notes, but if you don't mind just listing it out real quick.
Yeah, well, all of our socials are just at Roni's Mac Bar. We're on everything, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, Snapchat even. Our website is roniesmacbar.com. And like I said, we have a few Texas locations, but our next one is going to be Provo, Utah. And then after that, Albuquerque, New Mexico. Those should both be opening in the next couple months.
Super exciting. Well, again, Mary, thanks for sharing the ups and downs of the entrepreneur journey. Appreciate it.
Of course.